Hi, this is Richard Edelman, and you're listening to The Trust Makers.
Hello, and welcome to The Trust Makers. I'm Justin Blake, Executive Director of the Edelman Trust Institute. Today, I'm joined by three guests, co-authors of a new Harvard Business Review article titled, How Companies Should Weigh In on a Controversy, A Better Approach to Stakeholder Management. The article gives guidance to business leaders as they navigate contentious societal issues amid widespread social and political polarization. Sandra Sutcher is a professor at Harvard Business School who literally wrote the book on trust. It's called The Power of Trust: How Companies Build It, Lose It, Regain It. Peter Tufano is also a professor at Harvard Business School and the former dean of Oxford University's Said Business School. He is a management and climate scholar. My colleague David Bursoff is head of research at the Edelman Trust Institute, where he ensures the quality, integrity, and scientific value of Edelman's trust research. Sandra, Peter, David, welcome to The Trustmakers. As I mentioned in the intro, you've written a new Harvard Business Review article on a better approach to stakeholder management while addressing contentious societal issues. Sandra, how did this article come to be?
I think we were attracted for different reasons to this really hard management question. So stakeholder management, how you weigh the interests of your stakeholders versus your shareholders, is hard unto itself. You then add in contentious issues, that becomes harder. And then when you layer on top of that, politicization, and what should you do about that? This is like a level of difficulty that I think we ended up feeling that if we could do something to be practical and managerial, to help people understand how to manage that, that we would have done something good. So, you know, from my standpoint, that was kind of the drive for what led to the article.
Peter, how did you take this concept and help mold it into reality?
Well, I entered it in a different place, but we ended up all together. Where I started this, and this will get to the molding question, is this more really basic question about what's the responsibility of business in society. So there is this longstanding debate, at least in the United States, about shareholder primacy versus stakeholder primacy and what that means, and then how do you affect that? So my initial entree into this was to really think through that issue because it had been subject for politicians, for pundits, for economists, for political scientists, for lawyers. But a group that hadn't weighed in on this topic was actually people in the street. And that's why I was drawn to doing the work with Edelman. But once you get to the point, and we'll talk about some of the results, about how it is that everybody on the street seems to mostly agree that companies should worry about all their stakeholders. You quickly then get to the question, well, how do you do that and in what context? Some of that's going to be weighing into these big issues, which is the topic of this podcast. But I think there's also a broader question about how it is that this affects the business decisions you make, how you set prices, what products you do and don't sell, and to whom. So these two ideas, the idea of what you say and what you do, undergirded by this question about who you're responsible to, that really was what we brought to the Harvard Business Review. And it's been a great process with them that's kind of sharpened our thinking a great deal to produce this article.
David, can you talk about some of the trends from the trust barometer that spurred your thinking for this article?
I see this article in some ways as a culmination of five or more years of a narrative that we've been developing here at Edelman around the expectations that businesses become more engaged in social and societal issues. So this has been sort of a long-running theme in our thought leadership. And the idea with the article, what the article enabled us to do was not only sort of summarize all of that thinking, all of that knowledge, really document what the challenge is, but then take that next step of, okay, we've just given you this hairy, audacious challenge. We've told you you can't escape it. Now what we're going to do is tell you how to deal with it, how to manage it, how to succeed in this environment that a lot of CEOs, I think, find to be threatening and nervous making.
So, David, you spoke about this being a recent trend of the last 5 years or so. Sandra, how did we get to this point where business leaders are expected to weigh in on controversial issues?
The way I see that is, in a funny sense, business is being hoisted by our own petard. The better business got at being both trusted for capability and for ethical decision-making, then all of a sudden people said, well, you know what? Business is an institution that can help in many ways, and not just in its traditional uses. I think there was a spike of that kind of thinking during the pandemic, where all of a sudden business showed it was capable of thinking about the human interests of customers, employees. And so I think in a funny way, it's because as business, we've been doing well as an institution and relative to other institutions in terms of what it is that we're expected to be able to do. And that sort of, I think, has created kind of a groundswell around this expanded platform.
Peter?
The one amazing thing about this article is the three of us have gotten on the same page, but we get there because we sometimes disagree. And so I would argue that business has always weighed in on controversial issues, except they've done them behind closed doors. Business has had, you know, if you look at the history of business, a remarkable impact on public policy and on all sorts of activities. So the question is, why do it in public? Because they've done it in private for a very, very long time. And I think then Sandra and I get on the same page. But I don't want to kind of leave with the idea that it's new that businesses might weigh in on issues. Certainly the history of lobbying, you know, which goes back as long as the history of business, is a well-studied one.
So then, Peter, what shifted to push business to be more public in how it takes a stand?
So I think Sandra's hit most of that, but I'd also say all of us have become much more public in everything that we do. We expose our lives on social media. Business in terms of PR, and this is your business, I think has a completely different environment to face when everything that they do is not only subject to what they say, but what every employee says and what every customer says. And so I think they were wittingly or unwittingly dragged into the public sphere in these discussions and debates.
I, as usual, go back to the data and sort of the perspective or the voice of the general public. And what I was seeing there is there were really two factors that have led to where we are today. One that is talked about more, and then a second one that I think in some ways is more interesting, but is talked about less. The first one is sort of the demise of trust in government, people's loss of faith in government. Government is supposed to be the primary problem solver when it comes to social and societal issues. And people have lost faith in the ability of government to do that. And so that's sort of factor one. Then where it gets really interesting is, okay, if government is ineffective and paralyzed, who's the savior? Who's going to step in? And if you look at it on paper, there's two choices, either NGOs or business. Now, I always thought that NGOs should be the heir apparent if government falters, because NGOs, one, they're already in the business of filling holes in the social safety net. They're already in the business of addressing social and societal problems, and they don't have that conflict of interest of having to worry about profitability and shareholders. And yet, people chose business instead of NGOs. And I think the reason why they did that is because if you look at how people think about NGOs and business in terms of competence and ethics, you find that NGOs, especially a few years ago, had an ethics edge, but weren't seen as terribly competent. Business was seen as highly competent, but sort of less ethical at its heart than NGOs. And what people did is they said, I want the doer. I want the organization, the institution that has a proven track record of getting things done, of progress, of movement, and I am willing to give a little bit on ethics in order to get something accomplished. And so when I talk about this story, I don't talk about business as being the hero of the story. In many ways, business is more in the anti-hero mold. They're less John Wayne and more Clint Eastwood. But you know, when the outlaws are riding into town and there's chaos and there's trouble ahead, you want the guy with the gun who knows how to use it helping you out. And that's sort of the situation we find ourselves in today.
The article is so timely because we're at a moment where business's role in these controversial issues is being called into question and is sometimes being checked. I'm curious for your thoughts on this backlash to business, speaking out on controversial issues or taking action on controversial issues. And has something shifted, or is the imperative the same for business as it's been the last few years?
What we're seeing now is a bit of a correction. It's not the kind of backlash, the anti-woke rhetoric, I don't think is going to make this go away, but it's going to pull things a little bit in the other direction. When this started, I think what the thinking was, how businesses were reacting is, what are the big issues of the day? What is everybody talking about? What is everybody worried about? Those are the kinds of things that I need to focus on, that I need to have a POV on. And they did that thinking in some ways divorced from a sense of what was authentic to them as a business, where they had standing, what their stakeholders wanted. And so that opened them up to criticisms of opportunism or jumping on a bandwagon or being inauthentic, performative engagement. And so I think the pressure that is being put on companies to defend what they're doing is forcing them in some ways to be more thoughtful about what issues they weigh in on and how. It's preventing them from just sort of chasing headlines to really looking within themselves. What's important to us as a company? What are our values? What do we need to do to protect our business? What are the expectations being heaped upon us by the stakeholders that we have to be responsible to?
Yeah, and David, that's very much what this article is all about, how to take a thoughtful, stakeholder-driven approach. Sandra, do you want to talk a little bit about that approach?
I have an example of what that looks like, what we're aiming to talk about in the article and what it looks like in practice. So I'm going to walk into the space that few business leaders would ever want to walk into, which is the Israel-Hamas war, and talk a little bit for a moment about how a CEO, it's Chris Kempczinski, who's the CEO of McDonald's, is managing that situation. So it came up in an investor call where he was reporting on a loss of sales related to sales in the Middle East. And what he said on the call, and I'm going to quote him on social media in a minute, he says, it's a human tragedy what's going on. And I think that does weigh on brands like us. So what he does is he acknowledges the reality of a situation that everyone recognizes. He calls it appropriately a human tragedy, which it is. And he validates the people who are paying attention. He's expected that people who care about our brand would be thinking about this. So then he goes on social media, and the situation was an Israeli franchisee put on social media was providing free meals to Israeli soldiers and others in the Middle East. Other franchisees said they donate to relief efforts in Gaza. So people are unhappy on both sides. And what he does is he supports the franchisees by not telling them to not do what they're doing. So what he doesn't say is that you can't do these things, right? You're a franchisee. It's your job. Figure out how to run the business where you are. And on the other hand, he makes a very clear statement himself on social media. He says, we abhor violence of any kind and firmly stand up against hate speech. And then he says a second thing, and we will always proudly open our doors to anyone. So what he's done there is he says, this is who McDonald's is. You can count on two things from us. One is you're not going to walk into a store and see a lot of protest, because we're not going to allow that. And the other thing you can expect is that anyone should be able to walk into our store. So this is what we're trying to say, is that you can manage these moments. It's not fun. It's hard work. But this is an extremely nuanced and careful communication that I think everyone at the end of it says, oh, okay, I get what McDonald's is all about.
You've certainly chosen an example where stakeholders have very different beliefs and interests. Peter, can you talk about how that example fits some of the tenets of the article and the approach that you're recommending for companies?
what we never say is that there is a way to weigh into topics that will avoid controversy or that will please everyone. We're also, you know, saying quite clearly, based on the research, that you don't have to weigh into every single topic. So let's take both of those. Why don't you have to weigh into every single topic? Why does the public not expect you to? Well, they expect you to, according to the research that was done by Edelman and that we've worked on together, in issues where it's directly related to your brand, directly related to your values, relates to the, for example, health and safety of your employees and customers, and they expect you to have a point of view about that. By and large, if you look at, you know, a majority, maybe not a sizable majority, they don't expect you to weigh into issues that are purely political. In fact, if we think about the three responsibilities of business, and this is kind of one level up from how you weigh in, everybody sees business's primary responsibility as economic, but a close second is social, and political is a distant third. So we're seeing that in multiple places. So you're not required to weigh into every issue. But in this issue, it does affect people in really material ways, both directly and indirectly. The sidebar that we have in the piece, which is based on some spot research done by Edelman, shows that a very large fraction of people are affected by the war in Gaza. And therefore, it becomes incumbent at a minimum level to talk about issues. And we talk about that in the piece too, way before we knew that the events in October would take place, which is to say, worry a lot about the safety and health of your employees and customers, be consistent with your values. The other thing that at least is coming out from the survey data is that people expect and appreciate that some of these decisions will be hard and therefore they may reflect the moral sentiments of the executive team.
Sandra, do you have any other thoughts on this roadmap for business?
I think that we also found through practice some very practical things that business could do. One thing that business can do that many don't is you can actually, in your market research and in your employee surveys, begin to ask questions about which of these issues matter and to what degree to your people. So you can be more prepared for what the issue is, how important it is, and what the distribution of feelings is about that. And then, you know, business has to kind of organize itself to actually pay a more careful attention to its stakeholders. So some businesses have issues committees that track through their government affairs office all the issues that it's on tap with so that they can have a view across the organization. That again allows them to stay in front of these issues and start to prepare. So there are definitely practical things that business can do to begin to understand and not treat these as ad hoc situations.
David, we've spoken a lot so far about the expectations for business and the roadmap for business. Can you comment on, based on the Trust Barometer data, how are people perceiving business to perform in terms of taking these stands on contentious issues?
This is another thing that we've been tracking for a while. And very consistently, what we find is that people don't feel business is doing enough on these issues. So there's sort of the stuff that Sandra and Peter just talked about that help you decide which issues you need to be talking about. But once you've sort of picked those issues or determined what those issues are, by and large, what people are telling us is that businesses are much more likely in their mind to not be doing enough than to be doing too much. It's interesting because you start, especially these days with some of the politicization and the blowback, I think CEOs are getting a little nervous that they may have overstepped, they're doing too much, they need to be a little more circumspect. But year after year, when we ask people on issues like healthcare and equality, social justice, whether they think business is doing enough, too much, or not enough, we always see that the not enough numbers are, you know, 100, 200, 300% more than the folks who said that they are doing too much. So you may be feeling uncomfortable making these decisions, engaging in these behaviors, but at this point, you're not even close to the tipping point where the general public is starting to say, you know what? I think these guys are a little bit out of their swim lane. That's just not what the data is saying.
If I could pick up from what David's just said, you know, I study climate, and in the climate space in particular, this discontent about the level of business activity is so extreme that while business is, as you document in your Edelman research, more trusted than government or civil society, it completely loses that advantage, that trust advantage in the climate space by virtue of the fact that people around the world feel that business is not living up to its promises, that business is not doing the things that both it says it'll do and it needs to do. So it's great when business is well trusted. That trust can be eroded by a lack of action.
It can be eroded by a lack of action. And then there's also this significant pushback right now. So I think of the role of CEOs and those who advise them. Most of the people in those rooms are, if anything, suggesting to pull back in terms of taking a stand. And David, you spoke about how compelling the evidence is in terms of expectations that they will take a stand. Maybe Sandra, you can jump in and kind of give some advice for how to modulate here.
I can appreciate if you're advising or thinking about, do I wade into this space? And it's a time where it's very hard to do when there are winds against you. I think here, you know, we do rely on the data to suggest that that's within the circle of people you're talking with. But if you actually talk to your customers, your employees, the people who actually make a difference in your business, they want you to do more. And so you have to kind of fight that bubble effect of who you're listening to, who you're talking with, and pay attention to who it is that actually helps create your business. People who give you sales, investors, in fact, as well as your employees.
We're entering quite a contentious year. There are elections all around the world and one here in the United States as well. As we look ahead to this year, what are you looking at on this topic? How do you think this might play out for business?
So one thing that I'm paying attention to is when you talk about communication in a crisis environment, you're kind of shifting between conflict between groups to conflict within groups. Because what we're finding through all of this work is that no group is homogeneous. Your customers think differently, your voters think differently. And I think the same kind of careful appreciation of what those differences are, how many are on which sides, and what the content is of what people are paying attention to on both sides is going to help people do the kind of weaving the thread here that we've been talking about in the article. So that's the first takeaway I took from this, is that all of a sudden we're moving from persuasion to understanding. What do I stand for? What can you count on from me? And that's a different kind of an argument than I'm here to persuade you.
David?
I think what this coming year is going to mean for business is that there's going to be less margin for error. And when I talk about margin for error, it's weighing in on the wrong issues in the wrong way at the wrong time. But that said, you know, in the article, we talk about the idea that in deciding how to weigh in on controversial issues, you need to take into account your stakeholders, so employees, customers, communities, as well as your shareholders, your values and what they represent and how you present yourself to the public. And also, and you know, and we're not shy about saying this, you also have to think about finances and the impact on your bottom line and finding ways of showing that engaging in societal issues is part of your fiduciary responsibility, not something separate from it. And so if when you decide what to weigh in on, which issues and how, if that decision is sort of the culmination of balancing the stakeholder concerns, your values, and your fiduciary responsibilities, that is about as bulletproof as it's possible to be in today's environment, in today's context. And if you do that, then your weighing in on issues is going to be sort of very organic. It's going to be natural to your organization. It's going to be less risky. It's going to be actually more risky to avoid those issues than to weigh in on them. And even though there's going to be a lot more heat, light, and scrutiny on businesses and businesses' engagement in these issues this year, probably than ever, you're still going to be able to survive that. You're going to be able to thrive in that environment if you're disciplined in how you make the decisions we talk about in the article.
Thank you, David. Peter, let's give you the last word.
Well, that was such a great comment that it's hard to follow up on it. But I'd like to think that in periods like what we're maybe going into, where there's a lot of heat and light, that there's going to be value to wisdom, that there's going to be a value to prudence, that there's going to be value to sticking to your values, that there will be people will really appreciate adults in the room who are able to kind of weigh complicated conversations and stay a course, mindful. I mean, no one, for example, expects businesses to lose money. You know, the first thing that came out of the survey was that, you know, they understand that they have to be profitable. But at the same time, what we heard really very strongly is a sense of optimism that if business were to weigh into various issues and act in those issues, they could have a material impact on everything from inequality to climate change to discrimination. And I'd like to be hopeful that while political processes often pit one side against another, that business could find the central ground, which is that everybody agrees that, you know, families need to take care of themselves. We need to be safe. Our kids need to be educated. They need to be healthy, and some other issues that I think are not terribly contentious, and then continue to make progress on that. And if what this piece does, if only a little bit, is to give businesses some confidence that at least the data suggests that if they do that, there'll be pain along the way, but they're on a long-term path because that's what their customers, their employees, the people in their communities want, then maybe we will have helped them out a little bit.
What a great point to end on. Sandra, Peter, David, thank you for sharing your insights with us today. To our listeners, if you're interested in reading their article in Harvard Business Review, the link is in our show notes. And thank you for listening to The Trustmakers.
Thank you for tuning into The Trustmakers, an Edelman podcast in partnership with Advertising Week, where we speak with leaders and other trust builders across institutions. See you next time.